Well, good morning, everyone. I stand before you today older than Jesus. I just turned 34, and so I've now outlived Jesus. That's a milestone, I guess. In 2 weeks, we're going to be taking a trip down to Oklahoma, have a family reunion get-together that we haven't had in quite a while on my side of the family. So we plan on being gone. I just wanted to let you know. And the reason that we're doing it is because what happened 2 weeks after my birthday 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I turned 14 on a Tuesday. I remember that very specifically. Because exactly 2 weeks later, on the 27th, which was also a Tuesday, I was in the house. We were living in the house by the highway down in Rio Vista. We've since moved off the highway. But I was watching TV after school, as I probably did too often. And there was a commotion from the bedroom. And they were hollering at me to come. My brother and my mother were in there. And when I got in there, they were yelling at me to call 911. They were sitting my dad up in the bed, disconnecting him from his kidney dialysis machines. Don't remember much other than them just yelling, call 911, call 911. And I went and got the phone promptly. But the one thing I do remember just from that initial scene, them sitting my dad up and starting trying to resuscitate him, was that his eyes were open, but they were lifeless. There wasn't anything really looking out at me, even though he was faced in my direction. I called 911, and then I was told to go out into the driveway or into the front yard and wait for someone to come. The first responder, which was just a guy driving a pickup truck, this is fairly rural Texas, he was in there within 10 minutes. And he went inside and he started the CPR training that he knew, just from our local town there. We didn't have a fire department or anything like that. The fire department and hospital were in the town north of us, about 15 miles, about 10 miles, but good 15 minutes. And I remember that took a long time. I was getting rather anxious and frustrated as I was standing in the yard. The guy in the pickup truck had come inside, and he'd gone inside, and he was helping my mother and my brother. But that seemed to wait out there for ages before the ambulance finally showed up. And they got there, and they darted inside. And then I stayed outside. I don't know why necessarily. I guess it was too much going on inside the house. They didn't need to be crowded or anything. So I remember waiting outside a long time. The ambulance workers, the medics were there, and it took a long time before they finally brought my dad out. They were still working on him. They put him in the ambulance and drove him into the town with a hospital north of our town. And I don't remember how he got there. I assume maybe my brother drove. My mother, there wasn't anyone with us at that point. We didn't know our neighbors that well. We'd only lived there, I guess a couple of years. But even still, didn't have a close relationship with them. And often when something would happen, maybe we'd get a ride from people to church, but there was nobody really close around us, and it was an emergency right then and there. So I assume my brother probably drove. He had just gotten his license, and my mother probably wouldn't have been fit to drive at that point. And I remember being at the hospital and being in the waiting room, and it didn't take too terribly long. I assume it was 30 or 45 minutes before the doctors came out and apologized to my mother and said that they had done all that they could do. And then by that time, many other people from church were there, consoling us, praying with us. And then we went back home. And I have many vivid memories of that day. And so because of that day, in 2 weeks, we'll be down in Oklahoma, and it will be the 20th anniversary of my father's death. Lots of the aunts and uncles, his siblings, and other people from his side of the family were going to be in Oklahoma having catfish to celebrate. So I do need someone to fill in for me in 2 weeks, so keep that in mind if you're interested, any of you guys who would like to prepare a lesson. I ask sometimes, and many of you do step forward and do it for me, but I'd encourage you, even if you've never done one before and you'd like to try your hand out at it, please just let me know and we can get it set up. But it was 20 years exactly, and so I'm going to be in Oklahoma celebrating with his family, some of which I haven't seen in quite a few years. And the thing about being 14 whenever my dad died is I can't help but feel a little bit cheated. I can't help but feel that we missed something, that I missed something, that there should have been more. More time. I know many of you have had less time with your parents. Some of you, your parents died way before you were 14. But even being 14, it feels like there wasn't near enough. I wanted more interaction. He had been sick for quite a few years, and so he spent a lot of his time in the bedroom, several hours a day, hooked up to his dialysis machines. At other times, maybe sitting on the porch, couldn't go that far for quite a few. Hadn't taught school in 2.5 years, or 2 full years at least, whenever he died. And so I'd been out of work and unable to do much at all, held down by both the kidney dialysis and just his lack of energy and lack of ability to do much. And so one of my last memories I have as far as this interacting was being in the fifth grade. I remember going out and playing golf with him. And one of the first times I'd ever been on a full golf course, I'd hit the ball around the backyard some, but actually being on a full golf course with my dad, we were playing, and I was horrible. I still am horrible, in case you want to know. But I remember being there with my dad, and we got through 3 or 4 holes, and I remember him saying, "I'm just not feeling that well, Colby. Let's go ahead and go on home." And that's one of the last vivid memories I have as far as interaction with my dad. I remember him being around in the house and me being in the house, but we didn't go and do much those last few years while I was in junior high. I definitely wanted more guidance, more mentoring, more fathering. Anyone who loses a parent wants that, mothering or fathering, either one. And no matter how old you get, I think that's the case. That if you lose a parent, you feel like you're losing a part of, well, what now? Who's going to help me out now? Who's going to tell me what to do next? Who's going to encourage me with the next stage of my life? Who's going to give me that advice, whether it's wanted or not? Who's going to be there to encourage me and support me? Now, whenever you lose a parent, you feel like you're losing that very important foundation, again, regardless of how old you might be or how old they might have been. But going through high school and then through college and getting married, definitely I felt cheated. Those are things I should have been able to share with and embrace with my dad. I wanted more special moments. I remember being very young and flying a kite in Oklahoma whenever I was in early elementary school. And my brother and I, my dad had walked us down to the park and we were flying kites, and pretty uneventful, other than the fact my brother let his go out so far that you couldn't see it. And I, being my cautious self, wouldn't let mine get about more than 20 feet up in the air. Like, that's far enough. I'm not going to let it go any farther. And I remember my dad encouraging me, "Go ahead and let it out some more, Colby." But no, I shook my head. No way. I was afraid it was going to fly off and I would lose it. Just some small memories, but those moments when there was true interaction, when there was really a good conversation, whenever I felt like I was walking beside my dad, just not enough of them. Not near as many as I would have liked. Whenever he was passing on to me something important, advice, something that I would always know I would cherish and take with me, I would like more of those things. And I have such acute memories of October the 27th, 1992. I have such acute memories of that day. I wish I had more acute memories of other things. More very imprinted memories, like those couple I shared just now with the golfing and the kite. I wish I had more of those to fall back on and to enjoy. But no one gets all the time they wish. Not yet, at least. We look forward to the day whenever we'll all be sharing eternity together and we'll be able to catch up with those who've gone on before us and be able to share all we could possibly share at that point. But until then, I would imagine most of you, some relationship or another, probably feel cheated Wish there would have been more time. Wish there would have been more of a chance. Wish there could have been just a little bit more that could have been passed on, could have been shared. But unfortunately, it's too late for any relationship. A family member like a parent or a sibling, maybe a friend. God made us with the intention of living in community. He made Adam and Eve, and He made them together in order to be together. And since then, humankind has lived together. There are some who like being alone, at least for some periods of time. I'm naturally an introvert, and so I can be just fine being by myself quite a bit. But even then, you start to yearn for something more. Even then, you start to yearn for a connection. You start to yearn for a relationship. Because we're not designed to live by ourselves. That's not how God created us. Even the most introverted eventually will crave it. And to recognize that we've been cheated, that we've had some amount of that community, that relationship cut short, is okay. It's okay to recognize loss. It's good. It can help heal. It's okay to recognize regrets, whether you caused them or not. I regret that I didn't have more time to spend with my dad, even though I had no control over it whatsoever. I can still have those regrets. But this morning I want to focus on something you can do. Something you can do about it. You can't go get the past back. The past is gone. You can't plan on tomorrow. It's not yours to use. It's in God's hands. Whether or not He'll give it to you is His choice. We do have the present. It's all we have. And I would say that as far as doing something about being cheated, feeling cheated, there's something you can do. You can not cheat others. You might feel cheated because a certain time or a certain relationship was cut short, shorter than you wanted it to be. Felt cheated of that relationship, of that connection, of the growth and a mentor maybe. But what you can do is not cheat those around you. Do you have something to give? Because I guarantee you there's people around you who need it. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 13. We'll get back to 1 Thessalonians in just a minute. But Hebrews chapter 13, verse 13 says, so let us, well, that's not the verse I was looking for. So let us go out to him outside the camp bearing his reproach. I think I wrote that down wrong. My typos. Well, as long as it is called today, is the verse I'm looking for. If you find it, go ahead and shout it out. I'm not too proud. As long as it is called today, encourage one another. Use today. It's all you have. And our job is not just to be encouraged. I can feel cheated. I can want more for myself. But my job is to actually bring encouragement and support and help for others. Do you have a friend who maybe needs a pat on the back or a hug around the neck? It's your job to give it. Do you have someone that you would consider a partner, someone to hold accountable, a co-worker, not just in physical matters, but a spiritual co-worker, a co-worker for God, someone that you can work alongside? Well, don't let the opportunity get missed, because they might be needing you to join them. Can you be a teacher or a guide or a mentor to someone else? They need it. Can you be an encouragement to someone else? We were talking about Barnabas on Wednesday night. Got the nickname Son of Encouragement because he saw opportunities to encourage and went after them. He became known for being a person who brought encouragement with him, and all he did was just look at people around him and step in and interact whenever the opportunity availed itself. Well, 3:13. I threw in an extra one. Look at that. Oh, there it is. I was looking at the chapter. My eyes bounced right over it. Encourage one another today, and encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. If we don't do it, there's a consequence. We're letting each other go. If we don't step in and encourage, edify, build up, promote the good things of the kingdom, then we are in effect cheating them, not just out of the moment, but in some regards out of their own faith. Because we're not helping to grow it in the way that God maybe put us there at that very moment to accomplish. We might not feel like we have much to offer. Well, other people around me, I can't really help them because I'm so, you know, in need myself. Sometimes we get that mentality. Well, do you wish that you could have walked and talked with Jesus himself? Had him as your personal mentor, been like Peter, 3 years being with Jesus at his feet, listening to him, seeing him, hearing him. Imagine if you were an apostle, though, if you had been standing at the foot of the cross, you would have felt cheated. It's over. And then, oh, the joy of the resurrection. But then, less than 40 days later, the apostles are staring up at the heavens, and the angels come out and says, "Why are you looking up there? Didn't Jesus tell you what was going to happen and for you to get to work?" That story makes us grin, but I know exactly why they were looking up there, because it's, "No, not yet. Don't go yet. I want you to stay. I still need someone to teach me, to guide me, to help me." Jesus was about to send the Holy Spirit to them, but I can imagine their feelings of, "Not again. We saw him die on the cross, and now we're watching him being taken up into heaven. Why can't he just stay?" I imagine they felt cheated. And they wanted to know more of his tender mercy, more of his zealous fire, more of his compassionate service and his admonishing, his teachings. And here's the question for you. Are you a Christian? Do you follow Christ? Do you serve him? Do you love him? Have you given yourself to him, surrendered to him? If that is the case, then our faith states that he lives inside of us. And so as much as you would like to have been in the presence of Jesus, as much as you would have liked to have been impacted by his very presence, that same responsibility should drive you to interact with others, because that's exactly what you're doing. You're showing them Jesus at the moment that they need it. You're bringing his teachings, his spirit, his love, his compassion, his tenderness, and his zeal. It's your job to bring it to them, to offer that to the people around you, not cheat them out of it. Whenever you imitate Christ, it's exactly what the people around you need. And if you don't do it, you're depriving them of being in the presence of Jesus himself. So you see someone hurting, you see someone struggling, think to him, "Well, I wish that God would come and lay his hand of comfort upon them." We pray that, and it's a good prayer. But maybe you need to be that hand of comfort that God sends. A hand of encouragement, that hand of help.
What are you waiting for? Don't cheat them out of it. Don't stay walled up in our own little lives, in our own compartments that we're afraid to get outside of. We have Jesus to offer people. We have Jesus to offer one another, even here within the congregation. And I don't want to be cheated out of that, and so I'm not going to cheat you. Turn back to 1 Thessalonians now. I'll use the overhead here just in case I wrote it down wrong in my notes again. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 11 through 15. We're going to read through it again. And this time as we read it, look at all the ways that the character of Jesus is being encouraged and how that they're to treat one another with these characteristics. Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another, just as you also are doing. Encourage and build up. Did Jesus do those things? He's our model. That's why we follow. That's why we do it. But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction. Appreciate them. You esteem them very highly, in love because of their work. Even those that we recognize as being in positions of leadership still need to see Jesus in people. Often being in a position of leadership means that you see the worst case scenario. Always putting out fires. They need to see Jesus as well, reflected back toward them. Live in peace with one another. Jesus called us to be peacemakers. We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. That's what Jesus did. And it's not complicated, but it does take effort. And if we don't give that effort to one another, and then we are depriving each other of the very presence of Jesus. See that no one repays another with evil for evil, but always seek after that which is good for one another and for all people. And I chose 1 Thessalonians 5:11 through 15 because it very much went along with this idea of how we treat one another. And it was the first one that came to mind because I just love verse 11. Encourage one another just as you are doing, but do it even more. You're doing it, but there could be another step taken. My father was my father for 14 years, and I have good memories. And I reflect fondly on my father. I wish there always could have been a little bit more. Well, there can be a more, and we can give it. We can give it to one another. But there were so many other passages. Whenever I just started looking up the cross references in the Bible, of how many other connections it made to other, especially New Testament letters, and to the words of Jesus on how to treat one another, encourage one another, build it up, just pour it off the page. This is a constant theme. The New Testament spends so much time encouraging encouragement. Because that's what we need. We all need the presence of Christ. So we can either sit and think about how we've been cheated, or we can focus on how not to cheat those that we have the ability to serve today. 20 years is a long time. I have some very powerful memories from 20 years ago, but there's a whole lot I don't remember, that's for sure. And so much has happened since. And I can think about how many times I've been cheated out of something maybe that I wanted more of, like my relationship with my father. Or I can think how many times have I cheated a potential relationship with someone else over the past 20 years. Even in the past 8, how many times have I not been the kind of father I needed to be for my children? past 10 years been the kind of husband I needed to be for my wife? What are we cheating each other out of? Well, I don't want you to go away beating yourself up. Go home and sit in a room and sulk by yourself because you feel bad about how many people have been cheated out of this great potential to actually show Christ to each other in each other's lives. Instead, I want you to go somewhere. Interact with someone. Give someone a call. Write them a note. Do something about it. We often make the excuse, I'm too busy. And I say I'm too busy as I'm kicking off my shoes, either turning on the television or pulling out my iPhone. We make ourselves busy. And that's something Jesus never did, even when he was busy. Places to go, people to see, things to do. The woman reached up and touched the hem of his garment, and he stopped. He had just done a miracle on his way to another miracle, and here this lady's bothering him. But he stops and he's Jesus to her. He says, go in peace. Your faith has made you well. We can be Jesus to one another. We definitely don't want to rob each other of that experience. We need to offer Jesus to one another. And that's what we do every Sunday. And every Wednesday, every time we come together, we try to reinforce that we are offering Jesus. I am offering Jesus to you. I don't live it out perfectly. Far from it. Just as you don't. But I do have the Spirit of Christ within me. And he is changing me and enabling me to reach out and to bless other people's lives. And now I offer the supreme blessing of being saved by his blood. An invitation that's always open, but we emphasize now, if you need the blood of Christ, if you need Christ to come inside of you, he's waiting. He wants to. He's knocking at the door. Just let him in. Believe, turn, and be immersed. And Christ will be with you, will be in you. And you'll have such the blessing of a fellow family of believers. He will be Christ to you, and you in turn will start being Christ to them. And if you need that, if we can help, encourage, pray for one another, whatever it might be. If you have any need at all, won't you come as we stand and sing?